Really enjoyed it, brother. Over there in Acts 19, the Bible says that Paul spent a couple of years in Ephesus reasoning at the school of Tyrannus. And Gareth Reese and a couple others in their commentaries on that suggest that Paul may have been sort of running a preacher school there. We read about some preachers in the New Testament, Tychicus and others. Maybe they went there and studied for a time with Paul while he was spending those years there. Do you have any comment about if that might have been the case and what you think about that verse?
I suppose that could have been the case. I really don't know. I'm not ashamed to say I don't know about some of these things. And we don't know whether that was the case or whether it was the local people he was studying with. But I don't think it would be wrong for somebody to get guys together, study the Bible together, and help them to practice preaching and so forth. But their real value is out where the rubber meets the road. And one man said, it's on the job training. And he said, in the final analysis, you're on your own. And to a great degree, that's true. But that might be the case. I don't know. I said before, I think we could use 40 or 50 preachers. One of our men said that there were about 40 young preachers in that original study down at Wichita Falls, and I think that's probably true.
Appreciate it very much, Johnny. And I appreciate all the help you've given me through the years, and especially about books. And I think we need to realize that we are in a very critical situation in our brotherhood here in America. All of those 40 preachers that you talked about that were at that 1958 study, they're all about 80 plus years old if they're still alive and if they're still faithful. And a lot of preachers that are in the next age group, a little older than me, a little younger than me, we've had a lot of those preachers go aside. And we're in a critical shortage of preachers right now. And we need congregations who develop the leadership and the interest and take an interest in young men and encouraging them to preach the gospel. Not for the glamour and the glory of being told how wonderful they are and all of that, but who study the Bible, who are taught the Bible, who are encouraged to make the sacrifices necessary. We desperately need that because we're facing some huge changes in our brotherhood. Already in just the last few years, we've seen a lot of great preachers succumb to death, as is the case with everyone. And we need to be able to train people to start replacing these people. If you start looking around for young preachers in their 20s who are beyond just starting out and have become preachers in their own right, it's a pretty short list of people. And we need some work done in this area. And, of course, there's dozens of books that we could recommend, but I think one of the things that is often overlooked, people, particularly young people, need to get an overview of the Bible. They need to understand the storyline of the Bible, the historical development of the story of Israel and the coming of Jesus and the establishment of the church. Because if you don't have the overview, you're going to miss a lot in trying to sort out what the details are. And but you should, younger people need to talk to older preachers about books. There's a lot of junk on the market today. There always has been. But older preachers can help you spend your money wisely, and books are expensive. And you need to spend your money wisely for this sort of thing. I appreciate very much your presentation and your example through the years.
Thank you.
All right, Sean Hagin.
You mentioned that the home congregation was sort of low on your response listing. What advice would you give to a young man who's interested in preaching but isn't feeling like he's getting much support from his home congregation?
Well, if he can possibly wangle a association with an older preacher, well, I think that would be very helpful, very, very good for him, because he learns to comport himself properly when he's out on the road. I frankly always tried to do what was moral and good, but I didn't know how to act like a preacher when I first started, so every boy needs that.
I have a question. I will say I think wangle is a good verb, because I went through that experience when I was 15 or maybe a little younger and I wanted to preach. I pestered a lot of old men about letting me travel with them, and most of them ignored me. But one went ahead and let me travel with him, and I appreciate him for that. I did not know, as you were going through things you wish you knew then, I did not know then, even though people tried to tell me, how important it was to behave yourself appropriately in someone's home. I wish I knew that. In fact, I wish that people had not allowed me to stay in their home and been more harsh with me, so that I had learned earlier how serious that was. But I've got a question about being ordained. I heard different things whenever I was a young teenager, and some places, you know, they were asking if I was ordained, and other people said they didn't think I needed to be ordained. And finally, I was ordained, but the congregation that ordained me never told me to do anything, and about a year after they ordained me, I moved away, and none of them have ever spoken to me since. And so I wonder, you know, what does that mean exactly? And is that something that ought to be going on in the brotherhood? It isn't, you know, Paul says, how should they preach unless they're sent? And nobody sent me. I went and occasionally was called.
Well, I think that's an important point. I don't know that anybody needs to be ordained, or actually, when I was, quote, ordained or appointed is all I could say. The brethren went down to the courthouse and filed a paper, and that enabled you to get into prison or maybe sometimes to visit in a hospital or something like that. But other than that, I don't think anybody needs to get permission to go out and preach the gospel. But I think it would be helpful for a congregation to get behind a young man and to be responsible for his support and to see that he goes out and does a creditable job and so forth. And to answer to them, I think every young preacher needs a home congregation. Because the Bible says, obey them that have the rule over you, and if nobody has the rule over you, why, you're just a loose cannon. So I think that needs to happen.
I want to mention the study in Wichita Falls. I don't know where we lost out on the study business through the years, because there were about three or four fellows who taught, and they taught every day. They took a topic. Irvin, of course, was one of them. Even J.D. Phillips, I think, eventually came in, taught a little bit on prophecy, and somebody else taught on something else. But we went every day, and this person who was teaching would teach us every day for about 2 weeks, I think. And it did turn out to be one of the great studies, maybe the greatest we ever had. Today, our studies are not like that. We come together and somebody talks for 40 minutes and people ask questions and there's no general theme. And you know, if we had more studies like we had then, I think we would be able to encourage more young people and teach more young people what it really meant to understand some of the things they need to understand when they go out to preach. Now, this idea of ordination, I just want to make a comment about that. When we were young, the war was a real problem, people being drafted, and many of the young men who were making preachers got classified as, what was it, 4A or something like that, instead of a conscientious. The draft boards wouldn't give you an exemption very easily in those days. They fought the conscientious objectors and would turn them down.
But those men who were preaching, and that's what Brother Gay advised me to do, he said, I think you'd be better off if you apply for a 4A, whatever it was, which was a preacher's qualification, which they would readily hand out. And that eliminated the problem of having to wrestle with the draft board about whether or not you were going to go to the war or not. And I think when we traveled with preachers in those days, you know, when I first started traveling with Brother Gay, he told me I had to memorize the books of 1st and 2nd Timothy. That was just it. And every day I remember going out in the swing and trying to memorize those books, one chapter at a time. As soon as I'd get one chapter made, I'd go back and recite it for him, you know. But, you know, it wasn't just like you were traveling to have a good time. You were traveling to learn something, and you were forced to learn something. And I'll tell you one other story about that. One time we were together in a place, and there was another fellow who was a young preacher. And we were in a big crowd, and he was talking just on and laughing and doing whatever, you know. And Brother Gay turned over there in Thessalonians, I believe it is, where Paul said, study to be quiet. And he said, read that verse for us. Made him look like a dunce when he did, but at any rate, he quietened down after that. And, you know, the preachers you travel with would get on you about things. One of the worst whippings I ever took was from him when I preached a sermon and told the story of the exodus of the people from Egypt going to the Promised Land. And that night he said, you quoted two scriptures in that whole sermon, and that don't get the job done, boy. Well, I'll tell you, the next time I preached, I covered him up with scriptures. I used enough scriptures, but I've never forgotten that. I mean, if you're going to preach, you need to know something about the Bible.
Thank you, Ronnie.
Let's go to Chad Cranfield, and we'll come back down to Monica.
This is just a kind of a observation question, I guess. Do you think that the decline in our number of young preachers has to do with how we have so many smaller congregations that are failing? Because either the leadership has failed over the years, or 20 years ago they might have been 40 people and now they're 10. And there's no one there. Sometimes there's no youth at all. And other times if there is youth, they're not encouraged. And the ones that are encouraged are overburdened because they say, I do want to take a leadership role. But instead of being trained or even any kind of support, everything's just put on their shoulders without ever being built up to those responsibilities. Do you think that's a possible reason that so many youth don't want to go into the preaching field? I know it's not an easy field, but it is something that is most definitely rewarding and challenging, and something that I believe that most of us as preachers will openly admit, it's something that you have to have a love for that calling. And it is something that you strive for daily. But do you think that that's possible, that a lot of our young ones, that they see the struggle in the work and they feel that they don't get the support they need? Not necessarily financially, but emotionally and spiritually, and even being just kind of uplifted and tried to be built up and encouraged to do the work.
Well, I think definitely the fact that we have small congregations hinders. And that's happening all over the country. There's doors closing and some will never be open again due to death and other causes. But the congregations that are strong need to really apply themselves and encourage. And what Ronnie said about studying things that will help you in preaching, obviously any Bible study, any gospel sermon you hear is going to help. But some absolute dedicated study, like a study through the book of Acts, would be good.
All right, Alan Bonifay.
You know, Johnny, you talked about Linwood and learning from Linwood. Of course, Linwood didn't just sit down and give you a set of instructions, but I probably learned more from Linwood's preaching than anyone. I certainly find myself quoting him unintentionally more than anyone else. His words just come back to me. But I did want to say that from Linwood, I learned more about the history of our brotherhood in the last well, since the 30s, 1930s, than from any other source. And it's important to know the background of the people that you're trying to work with. And if that information is not gathered from older preachers while they're here, it won't be gathered. Of course, Ronnie's books have been a great help along that line. The Sun Will Shine Again Someday. And what's the other one, Ronnie?
I don't know.
The other one on the history.
Footprints.
Footprints on the Sands of Time.
Footprints on the Sands of Time. But Linwood did teach us a lot about the people that we were trying to work with, and I think that's important.
I think that our men, our young men, are no less courageous than in years ago. In fact, I don't believe that hardship would be a daunting challenge. I really don't. It's like I read somewhere about a man that was a captain in an army, and he said, "We have a dangerous mission, and I'm going to turn my back, and I want somebody to step forward and volunteer for this mission." So he turned his back. When he turned back around, they were all still in the line. Somebody said, he said, "I'm disappointed that not one of you volunteered." And they said, "Every man here step forward, sir." You know, that's wonderful when you have that kind of dedication. That's what we're going to have. And what we need to do is present to these young men a challenge to do that. Because I believe they will answer the call if we will just put it out and encourage.